Marhaban, salam. From the East to the Middle East, we travel for the 18th round of the Formula One calendar to the Yas Marina Circuit on Yas Island for the Grand Prix of Abu Dhabi. Since 2009, the circuit on a man-made island in the Persian Gulf has been at the tail end of the season, and in 2010 was the site of a championship-deciding victory for Vettel, who has won twice here. From day to dusk to dark, our drivers will hurtle around this anti-clockwise marina circuit that has 21 turns, 12 left and 9 right, 6 90-degree corners, and a hairpin leading to a straight, one of the longest in F1. Set in a land that has a traditional culture, yet boasts modern works like the iconic pod-shaped Yas Viceroy Abu Dhabi Hotel, which straddles the track, coloring the night with an LED canopy of lights, or the Ferrari World attraction. This is a place for the glamour side of F1. Yachts, oil money, golf, spas, a playground for the jet set. For our cast of characters vying for the win on this Arabian night, we have the prodigal son, the bushwhacker, the prat, the matador, the iceman, and the smooth operator. Who will shake things up and claim the victory, and whose championship hopes will fade like a desert mirage? Stay tuned. This is Desiree, your Sheikah, and this is your F1 Weekly Abu Dhabi Grand Prix Racecast. Mas salama, listeners.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you are not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 607, November 9th, 2012. Nasser?
Yes. This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Kimi Raikkonen. Please leave him alone. He knows what he's doing. Wasn't that beautiful?
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, the U.S. Grand Prix is back in town. Fernando should invite Flavio for some good luck. Sai's next big hit will be Leave Me Alone, I Know What to Do. And of course, we have Motorsports Mondial with the king of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid, and special interview this week with Dennis Trebbing of Trebby Racing. That's going to be a good one, and we'll wrap it up with 50 words from the forum. Nasser, welcome to the studio. We are pumped up with the Kimi Raikkonen fever.
That is so true. That was a super classic for all ages.
It was outstanding, it was exciting, and finally, after predicting that Kimi would win, at least I think I started in Korea that he would win that, but he's come through for me, and he is El Machismo.
That is very true. Yes. Very, very impressive when just, you know, this whole championship is now hinging on two races. Whew. One DNF could be the end of dreams and hopes of a nation.
Dreaming. No, this is exciting, and moi will be in Texas.
Well, I hope you have a good time, and I'm sure there will be some other F1 Weekly listeners, so if you meet them, give them my unconditional love and a hug.
Absolutely. I'm going to have to figure out where we're going to meet. I've been so busy with consulting here, consulting there, F1 Weekly. It's completely out of control, but yes, so I need to find a location somewhere in downtown Austin where they have some tire fires and some cautions.
Barbecue.
And barbecue, pure pork.
With KC Masterpiece.
Thank you, sir.
That stuff's made in Texas, not New York City.
Thank you, sir. So no, I'm going to go on the forum and we'll come up with some kind of meeting so we can all hug and think about Flavio and his Mancini.
There you go.
So anyway, great Grand Prix. And let's just get to the beginning of the whole thing. Because, really, we had Hamilton on pole, but nobody even talked about it. The big talk of the town was Sebastian Vettel disqualified.
Yes, you must have been very happy.
Well, not really, because Christian Horner, and I find this very interesting, Christian Horner says that it was Renault's call. Renault were the ones that told him to stop the car. Renault are the ones that put the amount of fuel and figure out the mathematics. And Christian Horner almost made it seem like that they had absolutely no telemetry on how much fuel was left in the car and continued to blame Renault, which I think is a bunch of hogwash. I have a funny feeling that Red Bull is very sophisticated and they knew exactly what was going on and they tried to put in the minimum, the absolute minimum of fuel in that car so he could beat Hamilton, and it didn't work, and they were short 150 milliliters.
Well, what you have just said, I don't think he was blaming Renault, but he was saying is that Renault told us to stop the car because they probably have more information, and what I've heard is that it was some problem. You know, this thing started with Honda some years ago, a calibration problem at the wind tunnel. Ferrari apparently has the same problem. And now they're saying there was some calibration problem with the equipment. But, you know, it's interesting. I find this very, very interesting that with Nando, when he lost that championship to Sebastian Vettel first time around, all they had to do was let this guy stay on the track. You know, because if a guy ahead of you in those days of refueling, if he stops and you go more distance, obviously, you know, next time around you're taking less fuel. So I, even as a complete non-techie armchair racing enthusiast, which I am, I was like amazed they would make that call. And now they're going into the final two races, and in Abu Dhabi they're taking such a chance. You know, even if you put, I think, 2 gallons more in that car, it's so fast, it probably would have still qualified at least on the same row as Nando, if not ahead. You know what I'm saying?
No, absolutely.
This was mind-boggling.
I thought it was mind-boggling, and I thought it was a team mistake. That was my personal opinion.
Yeah, but the team has a Renault engine, so you cannot skip that, Mr. Rogers.
I understand, but to specifically put it on, and I watched some of Christian Horner's interviews, and he specifically kept putting it on Renault's shoulder and not Red Bull's shoulders, I thought was a little wussy.
So you won't be sending him a zero check to Christian Horner?
Well,
he's off the list for
Christmas.
I send
zero checks to everyone.
Yeah.
As you well know.
Yes.
But still, fantastic still in the end, because what we got to see was Sebastian Vettel actually being a good racer from the back of the field.
I was very lucky with some of the close calls
he had.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Especially behind Daniel Ricciardo.
Absolutely.
But you know, one thing I've noticed when I saw that happen, all the greats, including Senna, including Schumacher, and I've seen this, so I say this, if they are not in where they belong on the front row and they have to, for whatever reason, start in the mid-pack, or if somebody spins them out and they have to come back from the back, they just have trouble getting to the front. They do get to the front, but it's argy-bargy, you know, trading paint. I remember Senna punting Alessandro Nannini in the Hungarian Grand Prix once, and we've seen how Michael Schumacher comes through the back of the field also. So it's interesting. They're all great, but they all have a little, you know, issues.
Yes, because that's because they're not used to it.
Yeah.
They're always given a great package, so they're always used to being on the front row. But nevertheless, it was very, very exciting.
Now, I don't know the starting of his car from the pit lane, was that dictated by rules and regulation?
No, you could choose.
Yeah, I think that was a smart move because, you know, if you're starting on the grid, I mean, you're going to run into somebody.
Well, the other thing is if you choose to start on the grid, then you can't make the changes that they made to Red Bull's, to Sebastian Vettel's car, the gearing and whatever, to change it from a front row starting car to a pit lane starting car. There's a lot of things you have to change. And of course, there was another car that started from the pit lane that day too, and that was Pedro de la Rosa.
And just like Sebastian, he also made history at the end of the race.
Correct.
Oh, we shall discuss that later.
Exactly. He was an exciting man himself. And he started from the pit lane because his tire, the ropes from the tire warmers got stuck in the wheel. And he couldn't do the opening lap. And therefore, he was stricken with a pit lane start.
You mean stricken with a slow HRT?
A slow HRT. Shocking. As well. Shocking but true. Anyway, the first lap, outstanding start for Lewis Hamilton. Perfect. Everything was wonderful. But the man who was machismo was Kimi Raikkonen. And this was Kimi Raikkonen's day. Up to second place. Great fight. It was fantastic. Mark Webber, a terrible start again. We laughed. Pastor Maldonado, I thought, had a good start because he didn't crash into anybody and he kept P3. Fernando Alonso passes Jenson Button for P4. Very, very exciting start. Bruno Senna and Nico Hülkenberg touch. They have their je ne sais quoi moment. And, well, we know what happens there. Hülkenberg is out of the race. Fernando Alonso actually quickly gets by Mark Webber. And Romain Grosjean has a puncture. His luck is just not in 2012, period. I think he should just start thinking about 2013. I think he'll get re-signed. But in the end, he goes, pits, gets a new stop. But what can you do? Now, of course, we've got all the eyes of the television watching Sebastian Vettel coming up the field. He has damage to his front wing by the time he's up to P16, dicing it up with not Maldonado, but Senna. And it wasn't really Senna's fault.
Bruno Senna's name is seen in quite a few incidents, and I'm not saying all his faults, but, you know, he runs into some situations.
I agree. Lap 5, Sebastian Vettel is up to P14. Romain Grosjean touches Nico Rosberg at the start, and that's what caused the puncture. On lap 9, we have a safety car because Nico Rosberg, I don't know, I called it a Schumacher moment, but the HRT of my favorite driver, Naureen Karthikeyan, slowed due to mechanical problems, we found out later.
Yeah, it was the hydraulic system failure and his steering wheel got frozen in time.
Frozen in time. And Nico Rosberg decided to go.
No, when a car slows down very quickly, what are you going to do?
I know.
It was very scary, though.
It was a very scary moment, but thank goodness they're both fine. And that was an exciting moment. So the safety car comes out on lap 9, lap 10. Jean-Éric Vergne, Romain Grosjean, and Paul de Rista. All three of them pit. And Sebastian Vettel, by the way, is up to P12.
My call before the race was, no matter where, how you roll the dice, Nando was going to be on the podium. That I knew.
Nando is always on the podium.
Yeah, so that I knew. And he
calls ahead of time and makes a reservation.
Yes, and I figured that Sebastian Vettel will at least get into the top 5. But going back to the start of the Lewis Hamilton start that you were saying, let me tell you, that's how this guy will look if he is teammate to Sebastian Vettel. He won't be having slow starts every race like Bastian's current teammate.
You think so?
Yeah, I know so.
But he's not his teammate, Nass. Yes. It's not going to happen.
He's going to the silver side.
Yes.
Somebody else did that. And
remember
doom,
that?
Doom, doom.
Ooh, that started my whole career, actually.
In podcasting?
Yeah, the dark side.
Yeah.
So anyway, the safety car comes in on lap 15. But before that happens, here we have, I think this is a classic Sebastian Vettel moment. And we've seen these moments before. And we've seen Schumacher and Juan Pablo Montoya have one of these moments before.
Oh, yeah. Two of the finest.
Yes, the finest. And it's amazing at this level of professionalism. But no, apparently Daniel Ricciardo is zigzagging behind the, you know, they're all behind the safety car. And he slows a little too much. Sebastian Vettel dodges him, goes through one of those polystyrene signs.
What, like a polystyrene here?
Exactly. But, and Sebastian Vettel gets on the phone and is very, very angry
Oh, yeah.
And screaming about this Toro Rosso. He can't believe that the Toro Rosso is doing this in front of him, the German.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to pay attention. I don't think Ricciardo slowed intentionally. He was, you know, it's just like the tunnel vision thing between Monty and Schumacher.
Exactly.
And he was very lucky, you know, these new tracks, they have quite a bit of runoff area. He could have easily hit a...
Yeah, the older barrier. Tracks, this would have never... He would have been out of the race.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting. But the safety car comes in on 15. We're racing again. Fernando Alonso, somewhat of a bad start, I thought, for someone who's as machismo as him. But what can you do? And on lap 20, Lewis Hamilton, who's doing an outstanding job, Nasser, top team, top quality stuff here, is slowing and is failing, and he's out of the race. What are you thinking right now?
Well, you know, sad but true. I mean, I've seen, I remember one of the races I remember with a tremendous performance was Mr. Kimi Raikkonen. I think it happened in two races at Imola and also in Spain. When he was leading in Spain, he just took off ahead of Nando, and then within a few laps, something went wrong with the McLaren. So, when something like that happens, you just get taken back to a certain moment in motorsports and say, okay, this was like that. But what are you going to do? The guy's leaving, and there was a lot of talk that, you know, this will happen, that will happen, they're not going to share stuff. But the man is a tremendous race car driver, and it was very good to see him put on that profile. I would love to see him win his final race with McLaren, something Ayrton Senna did when he went to another team.
It's not going to happen because they don't want to divulge any information to the evil empire. So anyway, but for me, the excitement was now. Kimi Raikkonen is leaving this race.
You know, I saw that, but frankly speaking, I thought Nando not too far behind. I did not expect Sebastian Vettel to come and win that race in a normal course of thing. But I thought, there are a few things I had a very strong inkling. A, that Kimi will finish, and he rarely makes a mistake. So I was sure that he's not going to spin out under pressure, but I thought maybe, you know, tire will wear out or they'll screw up on the pit or something. But apparently he knows what he's doing.
On lap 23, Kimi says, leave me alone.
That was classic, man.
I know what to do. Of course, that's after the team is so excited that he's now leading the Grand Prix. They're telling him his pace is good, his tire wear is good. We'll keep you informed of what's going on, Kimi. And Kimi says, yes, 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 leave me alone. I know what to do.
You know, first of all, I replayed that and listened to it and watched it a few times. And then after the race, I was just thinking, you know, when you're racing, you're leaving the house to fly somewhere on maybe Tuesday or Wednesday. So I was thinking, you know, his wife's name is Jenny, that when he's leaving and the late wife says, have a good trip or, you know, I love you, he's probably going, I know you love me. You don't have to tell me every race, every morning, every evening.
Exactly. That's the Kimi style.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost as good as Gangnam style.
Yeah.
So, no, very, very exciting stuff. Mark Webber spins after Kimi Raikkonen says what he said, but Mark Webber didn't spin because of that. He probably heard some of that, but he didn't spin because of that. It was because Pastor Maldonado was back in town doing what he does best. And I thought that was intriguing, and I thought it was refreshing to see Pastor and Mark Webber together. You know, the love.
Pastor, so, Romain Grosjean, Mark, well, you Felipe know, but, Massa.
You know. But if you look at the patterns each time, why is Mark Webber always trying to pass on the outside? And that's where he gets in trouble. Even on the Massa, he's trying to go on the outside. You cannot do that. He did that to Grosjean. You cannot do that and escape an incident. It's going to be trouble in River City. I replayed the incidents, and I'm telling you, it was Webber's fault. Webber has issues, and he needs to see Romain Grosjean's counselor, as far as I'm concerned, in this particular race. So, Perez had a few problems too, huh?
Yeah.
What's going on there? He's pumped up. He's thinking McLaren before the season's over.
He's already there. That's what they're saying.
He's already there?
He's saying, no, that's not the case.
Yeah, but Yeah, he's getting a little excited. He's trying to impress Martin Windmarsh and Ron Dennis. And I thought it was interesting, some bad decisions. Jensen Button, he passes Pastor Maldonado with no problems at all.
No, Jensen Button is like Himi. Very rarely will make a mistake.
Yeah, I agree. It was quality. Quality first. Lap 26, Felipe Massa's pins. Of course, contact with Mark Webber trying to pass on the outside. I thought that was interesting. I don't know. I just don't know. Lap 30, Mark Webber is told to let Seb by because Seb is now right behind Mark Webber. That was absolutely outstanding. And Sebastian Vettel, you have to give him some credit here. Not only did they give him a good car, but there was some good strategy. The team handled the pit stops well and the safety cars well. And, of course, since Mark Webber's not in the championship, he really doesn't have much choice.
It's just like the Michael Schumacher days at Ferrari, you know?
Yeah.
He can do anything. He can change strategy. He can come in late. He can make one extra pit stop. It's Bastian is very good. I mean, it's not quite. His only true test will be when Red Bull pours, say, Lou Hamm or some other, what you call, whippersnapper, and then we'll find out how good he really is.
It's not going to happen, Nasser. Teams are smart. Eric Boullier is smart. Flavio is smart. So.
Luca is smart.
Yeah, Luca is smart. So on lap 31, we've got Kimi Räikkönen, Sebastian Vettel, Fernando Alonso, who can't believe that Sebastian Vettel is second and is now having some heart palpitations. Pretty shocking. Jensen Button fourth. Bruno Senna is in fifth. Sort of shocking as well. Kimi Räikkönen pits on lap 31. 3.6 second stop. Not the greatest. They need to work on that. But he comes out and stays ahead of Sebastian Vettel, keeping the lead. Sebastian Vettel puts the fastest lap in at a 146.5. And then bang, Jensen Button matches with a 146.495. Very, very exciting. So on lap 32, we have Kimi Räikkönen, Vettel, Alonso, Button, Vergne, Grosjean, still in the fight for points, DeRista, Perez, Webber, and Pastor Maldonado. And Webber, with all those incidents, is lucky to be still.
Now, let me ask you a question. Kimi was in a Renault. This was Abu Dhabi. Is Nando and his people calling Kimi now the Finnish Petrov?
It's possible, but Kimi's so much more sophisticated. And Kimi's driven for Ferrari. And Kimi is a former world champion. So a lot of respect there. And that was the exciting part. We had Kimi, we had Fernando, we had Sebastian.
Very impressive. Heavy duty.
It's very impressive.
Industrial strength podium.
Yes, absolutely. Heavy, heavy industrial strength podium. Anyway, there's a big moment. On lap 38, Romain Grosjean makes contact with Mark Webber while Sergio Perez is dicing it up with Paul DeRista. Sergio Perez goes off track, and as he comes back into Romain Grosjean and has the gall to wave his hand at Romain as if Romain is always at fault. And this is what's going to happen. Even though Romain was not at fault, everybody's going to blame him. And when Romain was walking back to the pits.
See, it's like the Romain lettuce. Everybody wants to chop at him.
Yeah, exactly. I felt bad for Romain because he's looking at these press people that want to interview him and ask him, "You've done it again, haven't you? You screwball." And in the end, it's not true. Romain is innocent until proven guilty. So I'm on his side this time. And of course, Sergio Perez will get penalized for his stupidity and serve a stop and go penalty. Now, we have to admit, Kimi Räikkönen does know what he's doing. He's still in the lead. No mistakes. No Maldonados, no Grosjeans. Excuse me. This is a very, very exciting moment for me. We've got Lotus.
You know, before Kimi came back to Formula One, when the rumors were floating around, you know, there was a brief talk that he might go to Red Bull because when he was in rallying, he was sponsored by Red Bull. Can you imagine how this thing would have turned out if he was Sebastian Vettel's teammate?
It'd be a little different.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
There will be no four in a row wins, let me tell you that.
That's true. I agree. It would have been a very exciting season.
Yeah, there will be some cage rattling at Red Bull, both ways, you know, not just one way.
What's good is the small upgrades that Lotus has brought in, including the Kuanda Effect exhaust.
It's Kimi and Kuanda next season, I'm telling you.
I'm telling you. I'm ordering a Kimi a la Kuanda at the next bar I walk up to.
There you go.
But no, very exciting race, and it went on like this till the end. And the excitement was when Sebastian Vettel passed Jenson Button on lap 52 for the final podium step.
That was a very risky move and very nicely done, I have to say.
It was very risky, but very nicely done. And he knew that Jenson Button was a professional. It wasn't like he was going to pass Pastor Maldonado or Bruno Senna and have some trouble. This was good stuff. It was clean. And an outstanding race. Kimi Raikkonen with all the commentary. Abu Dhabi can sometimes be drabby and Dhabi-ish, but this was exciting from the beginning to the end. I really enjoyed this Grand Prix, Nasser.
Yes, I mean, the facility is incredible. And then, you know, that starting in daylight, ending under light, it's very impressive. But this race was very, very good. Very exciting.
It was very exciting. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad Kimi said what he said. It added so much color. And we'll be listening to that on YouTube for years to come.
And also, quite a bit of color was added by other people also.
Absolutely. Especially the podium interviews. What was going on there? And why don't we hear from the drivers now?
First victory since the 2009 Belgian Grand Prix. Tell us about your emotions at this time.
Not much, really.
The people want to know how amazing it is to win a Grand Prix. Delve deep, tell us.
Because last time you guys was giving me shit because I didn't really smile enough. So maybe this time again, but I mean, I'm very happy for the team and for myself, but mainly for the team. It's been a hard season for the team and not the easy times lately. Hopefully this gives a bit more belief, not just for the guys making all the work, but also for the guys who runs the team. So I hope this can turn around the tables and give us many more good races and wins, if not this year, then next year again.
Okay, well, I'll come back to you in a moment. Congratulations on that fantastic victory.
Yeah, I'm very happy. I think we were not super competitive this weekend. We started in 7-6 at the end with Sebastian penalty, so we had to fight all through the race, the first lap, some good overtakings, and then a very good strategy that gave us the possibility to fight until the end for the victory. In the last couple of laps, Kimi was a little bit slower, so we attacked, but second, I think, was the maximum today, starting sixth, so perfect Sunday again for us, and we keep fighting until the end.
Well, very.
Yes, I did, to be honest with you. I think after the first couple laps, obviously that target was drifting a little bit away. I had a messy start to the race. Obviously, it's quite difficult in the back. I wanted to get through the cars as quickly as I could, damage my front wing, and then in the safety car, I had a little bit of a big mistake with Daniel, I think, who was stopping his car on the straights, and I was very surprised. Turned to the right, and if it would have been 50 meters earlier, 50 meters later, I wouldn't have damaged my front wing further. But after that, yeah, I said to myself, either we go full attack or nothing. So that's what we did, and I had a fantastic race. I enjoyed it a lot. Obviously, a safety car here and there was helping. The second one, and after, in the end, it was a nice fight with Jensen. He was difficult to pass. I think it was. I expected to, have a little bit easier time because obviously I was passing a bit slower cars before, and with him I was ready.
So anyway, I didn't leave the expletives because F1Weekly.com is a family show. But interesting how they decided to use foul language in the interviews on stage. Of course, David Coulthard leading as the MC. But still, I found that interesting. And of course, the FIA has reprimanded them for using that kind of language.
Yeah, they need to be careful.
Yeah, they're supposed to be professionals.
And of all the places, this was in Abu Dhabi, not in Monte Carlo or, you know, someplace like that.
Or Manicourt.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, this kind of stuff may be appreciated.
Exactly. So it was outstanding. I really enjoyed the whole thing. And of course, now I'm going to Texas.
And now the end is near.
The final curtain.
It's coming down on somebody.
I know. Give us some thoughts about
now,
that.
The track looks fabulous. I do have a question for you. If the championship is decided in Texas, are we going to see you running to the nearest Kimberly Clark office for some Kleenex?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Tears will flow.
Okay.
But Fernando still has a big chance here, Nasser.
No, I'm telling you, it's not over because, you know, Sebastian came very close to not having some, not finishing the race or not scoring point. I mean, it luck was on his side. But any small issue where, you know, it's a small tangle with somebody with the front wing, cut tire, we can have a 2006 Brazilian Grand Prix all over.
I agree.
Yeah, so it's not over. And Nando is going to be there. If his car is not breaking down, this guy is going to be on the podium in both races. Most probably. And then they can do the Texas two-step, you know. But, but at the same time, if nothing happens to Bastian's car, he's going to be either first or second. I just cannot see how he can be second. Unless the only team that can beat him is McLaren. That are having some reliability issues. I just cannot see Mark Webber beat this guy in the last two races. But anyway, I have some more informazione here. May I proceed with your express written consent, please?
By all means.
Okay, sir. So, Kimi Raikkonen, 33-year-old Enigma from Espoo. First win since Spa 2009. Seventh podium of the season. Very impressive. With two races to go and 50 points available, he is only 57 points off Vettel's lead. Kimi has completed every lap of the season so far, has scored points in every race except round 3 in China. May not be able to repeat his 2007 comeback feat, but still very impressive on his return to Formula 1. Did you expect this kind of performance from him?
No, not at all. I would have been impressed if he had finished 5th in the Drivers' Championship, maybe with a few DNFs, but I thought he did fantastic. Yeah. And I thought Lotus did a great job in getting Kimi's services.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's an old established team, so they have the know-how. But, you know, I also did not expect him to do very well, considering that he was coming back with Lotus. If he was coming with Red Bull or McLaren, then this would not have surprised me. But given the package he had, no package, but he's still delivering. That's very, just like Nando, very impressive. He has already signed with Lotus for 2013, who have yet to confirm Romain Grosjean, but I think they will. But Kimi and Kwanda exhaust could go all the way next season, and that will be something. Fastest lap of the race was 1 minute 43.964, said by Sebastian Vettel. Pole position, number 25 of the career, was set by Lewis Hamilton at 1 minute 40.630, and this was the 75th pole for the McLaren-Mercedes combination, which is coming to an end pretty soon.
Correct.
And I would love to see Honda back with McLaren.
It's not going to happen.
Because, why do you say that?
Yeah, because, you know,
McLaren does not want to pay for engines, and this is what will happen. I think after this season, they will have to pay for Mercedes engines. So if Honda comes in, it will be Mr. Dennis Saint, free engines.
Maybe it's Hyundai.
Well, I think we're a few years away from that, but it will happen someday. Sebastian Vettel arriving on the podium after starting from pit lane was very impressive, as was the pass on Button. Not so impressive, crashing into DRS signboard. That was funny when he met his challenger on the podium. Nando again doing the opposite of his teammate. This championship could be decided in Austin in Sebastian's favor. On the other hand, with a little help from Magneti Marelli, it could also go Nando's way in Sao Paulo. Both are chasing their third championship. So what will you do if Nando wins? What are we talking here? Outback Steakhouse dinner?
Absolutely.
For the entire staff?
For the entire staff.
Including David Tapia.
David Tapia, former producer and mentor.
And the originator of the idea for podcast, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely correct.
And Steve Faub.
Steve Faub, the now baseball-loving man that he is.
Papito.
Correct.
Congratulations to Pedro. This is the historical moment. Congratulations to Pedro de la Rosa for becoming the first ever HRT driver to finish the race on the lead lap. I see a podium for them if both Michelin and US Grand Prix returns to Indy. it can happen.
We're not laughing over here. Michelin fan through and through.
Yeah, but sometimes you have to face reality and get a refund of your ticket also.
I did.
Yes, me too. Daniel Ricciardo, the second Aussie mate in F1, has now scored in 5 of the last 7 races. And talking of Michelin, I've heard that they are thinking of coming back.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, because I don't know how much they are paying Pirelli, but I'm sure, you know, if Michelin wants, they can muscle Pirelli out of the way.
If they want, Michelin's got some big, big tires.
Big tires and obviously a very much larger market share than Pirelli. Much larger. Abdab Young Driver Test. After the Grand Prix at Yas Marina, many young and not so young drivers took part in the annual test. Red Bull, which happened this week, you know. Red Bull had Antonio Felix da Costa. The Portuguese driver is Dr. Marco's new blue-eyed boy and did very well in both GP3 and World Series by Renault. He tested with the team on Tuesday and Wednesday, so they are really bullish on him. Red Bull is bullish on him. That's good.
And Felix da Costa has been paying dividends. I mean, top of the timesheets, doing an outstanding job.
Oh, yeah. You know, people are always, you know, trying to get into Formula One. You have to do what this kid is doing or what Robin Friens did. Even then, it's no guarantee. But like Jean-Éric Vannes, you know, winning 13 races in British F3 in your rookie season, including all 3 at Spa, sure, they're going to put you in bigger series, and he kept performing then also. Also testing with Red Bull as part of winning the World Series by Renault was our friend, Dutch boy Robin Friens. He is on a hot roll after wrapping up his 3rd championship in as many years. I was reading his interview in one of the magazines in Abu Dhabi. He tested with Red Bull because he is, you know, that was the prize for winning the World Series by Renault, and also with Sauber, which is coming up. And in that interview, he said that he was twice offered to join the Red Bull program, and he turned it down because he wants to call his own shots. And he said, Red Bull, they treat you like a dog. Which probably he heard from with Antonio Liuzzi or Scott Speed.
Very possible.
But if you ask Sebastian Vettel, he's going to say, hey, man, every time I looked at Dr. Marco, he threw me a bone. And pretty soon he may have 3 big bones.
Keep up the good work, man.
Thank you, sir. McLaren, they had 2 of their regulars on hand, Gary Paffett and Oliver Turvey. Obviously, the world of Formula One has passed by Gary Paffett. Oliver Turvey will have a hard time getting into Formula One full-time, even though both are very good drivers. And the new star, and I have a strong feeling this kid is going places, Kevin Magnussen from Denmark.
They said that about his father, too.
Yeah, but this kid has learned from Papa's mistake. He's in the McLaren driver program, and he went very quick. He's a very good talent. And you know, the gentleman I buy the photographs for my calendar, Mr. Peter Nygaard, he knows Kevin and his papa very well. You know, they're from Denmark, so...
Happy family.
You turn around, you see the whole country.
Carl
so I'm trying to arrange an interview with Kevin Magnussen through the wonders of Skype. We met him a couple of years ago at Oulton Park with Mr. Brazier. Nice young kid, but he's very talented. You know, last year when Felipe Nasr won the British F3 Championship, they both won 7 races each. Lotus, they had Eduardo Mortara, the Swiss driver who is now in DTM, Davide Valsecchi, who won this year's GP2, and your favorite, Nicolas Prost, who falls in the not-so-young category, but good looks or last name can take you places. We've seen this movie before.
That's right. They call him the student.
Yeah. And he was a student at New York University.
Correct.
Many moons ago. Sauber, Senor Esteban Gutierrez was in the cockpit on Wednesday and Thursday, testing for a team where you are a test driver, reserve driver for 2 days means you may be in the cockpit. He could be Nico Hülkenberg's teammate in 2013. Robin Friens is expected to be the team's reserve driver next season and thus had the luxury of testing with 2 teams at Yas Marina. I am expecting an announcement. It may come at Texas, where you're going, Austin. I would love to see Senor Esteban Gutierrez. And what you were asking me why I'm not going to U.S. Grand Prix at Austin, well, a couple of things. I am waiting on confirmation on Esteban's deal. If it happens, then I have worked out a deal with his PR guy that if he's announced as a driver, moi is going to Monterey for a sit-down. chat with a Formula One driver. This will be our very first interview with an active Formula One driver. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying, Nasser.
And the other thing is, you know, this homie kid, Inam Ahmed, who we, Mark, Dr. Mark and I saw in September in England, he is coming to Vegas at the big SCUSA National. This is the event where Michael Schumacher came a few years ago. So that is on the same weekend as the U.S. Grand Prix. So moi, since I have my priorities, I'm going to Vegas. But I'll watch the race live, that's for sure.
I know, and you know what they say about Vegas, Nasser.
What stays in Vegas? What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But I'll bring a few goodies for you.
And you'll always be saying, leave me alone, because I know what to do.
You don't want to say the first part there. Second part. Okay, back to motorsports. Toro Rosso, the team always on the lookout for new talent. That's what I like about this team. They're always looking for new talent. You know, chop chop. Qualifying the top 10, finishing the top 10. Next. They had an all-Latin flavor with Luis Razia of Brazil and Johnny Chicaro Jr. of Venezuela doing the driving. Johnny Chicaro Jr. has the blessing of Pedrovesa. So maybe we'll see two Venezuelan drivers next season. And as long as you perform, you can't complain. Caterham, your favorite team.
Caterham.
Guido van der Garde is on the verge of signing for the team for 2013. He tested for 2 days. And then on the final day, we had American Alexander Rossi at the wheel. Rossi is expected to race for team sister operation in GP2 next season. 2 years of World Series by Renault and a full season of GP2 should prepare Rossi well for entry into F1 orbit, hopefully in 2014. And he was quoted as saying in one of the magazines that he has a long-term contract with Caterham. So hopefully, you know, we will see him in Formula One sooner or later. And some of the other teams tested young drivers earlier in the season at Silverstone. Money matters. Shall we discuss money matters?
At F1 Weekly, that's all we talk about is money matters.
Very good. Winning will not be cheap in 2013. The FIA has raised the entry fee for next season. This year, each team paid $395,000 flat fee. Next year, they will have to pay $500,000 plus $5,000 per point. So HRT will have a very low fee. Except for the Constructors' Champion, their bill will be $6,000 per point, apart from the $500,000 base entry fee. So Red Bull for next season is already looking at an entry fee of over $2.5 million, which is nothing for Christian Horner.
No, but all of this helps the FIA, you know, Jolta travel in style, private jets, Rolls Royces at each airport for pickup and delivery. This is stuff that's expensive, Nasser.
So they have the lifestyle of the executives at AARP.
Correct. Right. Except that, there are no Kias or Hyundais at the FIA.
Oh, no, of course
not. It's all top. The best.
Oh, yeah. Man on the move. DTM racer Jamie Green is reported to be joining Audi after many years with Mercedes. Green has 8 wins in the German Tin Top Series and was 2004 F3 Euro Series champion over, listen to these names, over the likes of Nico Rosberg, who was 4th, Lewis Hamilton, who was 5th, and Robert Kubica, who was 7th. Further down the list, we see Adrian Sutil in 17th. It must be said, in his second year in the championship, Lewis Hamilton won 15 of the 20 races. His friend Sutil finished 2nd behind him with 2 wins. Cross-channel collaboration. You must be excited about this news.
I was, sort of.
Yeah, a joint venture has been established between Caterham and Alpine. Caterham has taken a 50% stake in the Dieppe, which is in the northern part of France.
Normandie,
there you go, in the Dieppe-based manufacturer. The new sports car from the joint venture will be similar to the famous A10, which was very nicely done in French Racing Blue. Now, how come you're not really excited about this thing?
I am excited about this because they will be building these cars not in Malaysia, but in the Dieppe factory, in the original factory where the A110 was built, in Dieppe, Normandie. So I'm very happy about that. As a matter of fact, the local government is also part of this deal to make sure the jobs are kept in the area and this historical manufacturing facility continues.
Yeah, you know, I have, I believe it's the series called Metra Racing in Blue, where they talk about the app and Alpine, and it is very, very nicely done. So, anyway, Jorge Lorenzo, the MotoGP rider, world champion, two-time, will compete for Viva España in Bangkok next month in the Race of Champions. It will be nice to see Nando as his teammate. He should go there because Michael Schumacher is also going.
Yeah, well, you know, Spain loves their motorcycles.
That they do.
They do. The MotoGP is huge in España, so yeah. Not surprising. And Fernando just might be there, Nasser.
Yeah, they have like three or four MotoGP races in Spain.
Of course, because that's where it's happening. So anyway, Nas, thanks. We're going to take a quick break because we have some globe spinning to do.
Si, senor.
So we'll be back after this brief message.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charonne region, sipping on cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charonne. Opening in June 2012, Bassinon offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts, suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bassinon is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bassinon.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's BASSINAUD.com. Allons-y!
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the man himself, Nasser Hamid.
And we continue the tradition of greetings and racing regards. Today we have a lot of tin tops from all corners of the world.
Don't tell me what to do, Nas.
No, I never will. I know you know what you're doing.
Thank you.
World Touring Cars from Shanghai Grand Prix Circuit. Race 1 was a 1-2 for Chevrolet, with Alain Menu winning over Rob Huff. Boys in Beamers were 3rd and 4th, with Stefano d'Este finishing ahead of Tom Coronel. The result for the second race was very interesting. It was a reverse of positions between the teammates. Huff winning over Menu, and Coronel was 3rd with d'Este 4th. The season finale is in Macau next weekend. And my humble request to Mr. Interraptor, please let me know how to watch the Macau Grand Prix. I will try on the VIP box, but if that's not available, I will look forward to some other sources, because I do enjoy this race very much. And there are a few drivers that I know. Harry Tinknell is racing. Felipe Nasser is racing. A young German, Daniel Abt, who I think is a future star. Another German young up-and-coming driver, so it should be interesting. So the season finale is in Macau next weekend, of course with the famous F3 race. Huff leads with 390 points over Menu, who is on 355 points. Among the manufacturers, Chevrolet leads with 930 points over BMW in second with 602 points. And I think Chevrolet is pulling out of World Touring Cars at the end of the season, which is pretty sad. NASCAR, the American Tin Tops boys were pistol packing in Texas. This was round 34 of 36. You know, I wish this was on the same day as the Grand Prix, so you could have gone and sample best of both worlds.
I mean, and this is at the Texas Speedway?
Yeah, Texas Motor Speedway.
And wasn't there a racing suit that was stolen from the Texas Speedway?
Yeah, it was the Dale Earnhardt. And we helped relook and discover it. Yeah.
Yep. That was, yeah. Those were exciting days for us.
Yes, there were a lot of giggling and rolling on the floor. And those were the days of the intense incoming digital slings and arrows. They have softened up quite a bit on
yeah,
those.
Yeah, no, we don't get the kind of critique
yeah.
that we deserve.
So either we know what we're doing, or we have no listeners left now except for a few. So we thank them who was listening. Okay. The end is near, of course. You know, season is coming to an end. You know, the season ends in, like, late November. And, boy, in February we have Daytona 500. which is a race I always enjoy. Jimmy Johnson was the winner over Brad Keselowski. They are in the same position in the chase to the cup, with Johnson leading by 7 points. Kevin Harvick won Nationwide race, and Nationwide is the Happy Dos of NASCAR Racing Nation. And of course, they don't say Happy Dos, they say GP2. Australian V8, the Australian Tin Tops, they were the support races to the Abdab Grand Prix at Yas Marina. Three races over the weekend, same pole winner for all three races, Will Davison, and Jamie Wincup went one better, winning all three races in his Holden Commodore, which is a GM product. Wincup leads the championship with 3,360 points. Frosty, a.k.a. Mark Winterbottom, is second with 3,064 points. And that's where do share the commonality of points with NASCAR Nation.
Yes, I noticed that.
Yeah, me too. But, you know, the NASCAR, now they do the chase, the points are set, so we don't get those 9,000, 10,000 anymore.
That's too bad.
Yeah, which is kind of sad. This is interesting. It was mentioned during the Formula One broadcast also by Bob Warsha. Formula Ford from Silverstone, 17-year-old Florida fresh Tristan Nunez won the Walter Hayes Trophy. This is good for him, and our congratulations to this young kid from young Ute from Florida. The sun rises in the east. Kazuki Nakajima, do you remember him?
Yeah.
Ex Grand Prix driver for Williams. Thank you, Toyota, has won the Formula Nippon Series in Japan after winning the final race of the season at Suzuka. His brother, Daisuke, was 10th in the race. And the Formula Nippon car is a beautiful-looking car and designed and built in Southern California by Swift Engineering, owned by Mr. Masushita, Hiro Masushita, or however you want to call that name, from the Panasonic musical dynasty. The last ever IRC event in Cyprus was won by ex-Dakar Rally winner, and that race is coming up soon, so I'm excited. Nasser Al-Attiyah of Qatar in his Ford Fiesta. And for the famous last words, we go back to Kimi Raikkonen. When asked, is it good that you've answered that when's the win coming question? The answer, and I quote from the one and only Kimi Matthias Raikkonen, I've never cared really what people think, end of quote. Very straightforward, very brief, and very, very... You never have to ask him, what did you say?
Yeah.
It's very clear, the message always. So shall we move on to our interview of the week, sir?
Absolutely, sir.
Thank you, sir. This conversation is young American talent, Mr. Dennis Trebbing, who was born in 1992, and he resides with his family in Florida. Racing has been his passion for the past 6 years. After success in karting and Skip Barber series, Dennis has been racing in the Scirocco R Cup in Germany, which is a very nice-looking car, by the way. This year, he finished an impressive second in the championship and is hoping for championship glory in 2013. My thanks to Dennis for his time, and we wish him continued racing success on both sides of the pond. And as he would say at home, danke und tschüss. Okay, folks, on the line we have Mr. Dennis Trebbing, a young American talent from Florida. Dennis, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. I'm doing pretty good over in Florida. You know, it's a little chilly this morning, but, you know, I'm doing pretty good. Sun's out.
Have you had your first glass of orange juice? Florida fresh orange juice.
Yeah, we did. I had this morning before I came to work.
Okay, that's good. Okay, yeah. Now, first of all, congratulations on a job well done in this year, Scirocco R Cup in Germany. Please tell us about the car and the series for our listeners.
Yeah, thank you. Second, the championship was pretty good this season. I was really happy. The car is a 235-horsepower front-wheel drive Volkswagen Scirocco R, and we run on propane. So the car is running off of earth gas, and with that, we are the cleanest running series in the world.
When it's running on propane, does it make a big difference between in terms of performance as compared to a petrol-driven car or gas-driven car?
No, actually, the performance is the same. The only thing is actually the motor runs a little bit warmer, so we can't push the motor as far to the maximum as you would be able to with a gasoline motor. But still, I mean, it's the same thing, feels the exact same way.
Now, the car they are selling in Europe of this model, does that also run on earth gas, as they call it?
No, actually, the one they sell in Europe is actually run on normal fuel. And ours is run off propane just because they wanted to make it the cleanest running series in the world.
Okay, cool. And you like the series?
Yeah, it's an awesome series. It's the best support series, I think, in the world that I've found. And also we run with DTM and we're live on TV. So it's just all around the best package, I believe.
Okay, so did you get a chance to have some Wiener Schnitzel with Susie Wolf?
Yeah, we went over there. I mean, every weekend they have some great legends with us. Like last weekend we had Sebastian Vettel's dad there with us. And we've had Johnny Herbert. We've had a lot of famous F1 stars also running with us. So, I mean, hanging out with them and eating the German food with them, it's pretty fun.
Cool. How does German food compare with good quality American meals like hot dog and cheeseburgers?
It's different. It's two different worlds. I mean, I love being in Germany and I love having, the schnitzels and stuff. But it's nice having both coming back and forth and having both great meals.
Now, I was looking at your family's business. Are your mom and dad from Deutschland, Uber alles?
Yeah, actually, my parents are from Germany. They came to America 24 years ago, and they started their tile business. And, ever since then, I grew up and was born and raised in Cape Coral, Florida, and I'm still living over here. But I just travel back and forth for every race when I race in Europe.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Yes, I can speak German fluently. Ich kann auch Deutsch reden. Yes, I can speak it fluently.
Oh, that's very good. Okay, yeah. Now most young American drivers who cross the pond normally go for open wheel racing. How did you discover this series?
I did the Skip Barber National Series, and I was wanting to move up to Star Mazda or go to F3, but funding wise, I was not able to, and I didn't want to give up my dream of becoming a professional. So I'm under the Uwe Altson Automotive. Uwe Altson's a professional driver for BMW, and I'm under his management. And he saw, hey, that's the best way for me to keep going in my career and also to jump in as a factory driver.
No, I got to tell you, I've been following this business since 1973, and it's very, very rare that I see a young driver who makes a decision that is a sound decision. You know, we all want to be Formula One drivers, but it just takes so much money and politics and, you know, what else that comes with it.
That hurt me. That was the funding wise. I mean, the talent was there. No, you know, there's no question about it. It was just to get there money wise, we didn't have that. And I didn't want to give up the dream.
No, I think you made a smart choice. Okay. Now, 2012, the season was your second in the series. What was the biggest improvement you saw in yourself as a driver this season compared to last year?
The biggest thing compared to last season with this year was just I was more comfortable in the car. I knew what it would do. I could predict what was going to happen. And also we found out the setup. The setup is the biggest thing also in the car. And also we figured that out pretty well this season. And I believe that's what helped me a lot to finish up in second.
Okay. Now you mentioned Uwe Altson. Obviously I know him as a race car driver. How did you hook up with him and got under his wings?
Actually, I met him when he was on vacation in our town. And we just went to dinner once and we just kept hanging out. We go jet skiing, go on the boat, go shooting, just go hang out. And he was he said, hey, you know, you're pretty fun. Let's see how you drive, and did a pretty good performance this year, and he's very happy. And we're definitely hooking up for next year and a couple more years to come and see where my future can go.
Okay. Now, looks like you were on the podium in three races. Please tell us, what tracks did you achieve these?
The podium this season was at Red Bull Ring, the Nürburgring, and I forget where else I was on podium. Aschersleben for the last race of the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, pretty impressive tracks. Your thoughts on driving the Nürburgring and Hockenheim Ring?
Yeah, the Nürburgring and the Hockenheim Ring are just spectacular to me. I mean, I just loved every moment of being on the track. Hockenheim has to be one of my most favorite European tracks. I just love that it's fast flowing and it's got everything that you want. And Nürburgring is just the history behind it. The history is just amazing to be there and just to know so many legends have driven there. It's really cool. It's almost the same way like being at Sebring.
Yeah. And have you had a chance to do drive your car on the old classic 14.2-mile-long Nürburgring?
I did a VLN race this season in a Porsche Carrera Cup car on the VLN. And it's an amazing track. I mean, it's got to be most exhilarating track around the world, I believe.
Yeah, it is very impressive. I've never driven the track, but I've been there and just, you know, going to the track through Adenau and all that area is just fantastic.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's not something, nothing can ever be replaced, and nothing can ever be replaced or duplicated.
Yeah, very true. I understand some gentleman was trying to build a replica of Nürburgring in, of all the places, Nevada. Did you hear that?
I never heard that, but that'd be pretty difficult. I mean, you'd have to have a very, very large bank account to try to do that.
Yeah, well, some people do have big bank accounts, but I wonder where he will get all that greenery in Nevada.
I wish the best luck to the gentleman who wants to try that, but, I mean, when he finishes that, I'll have to try it out.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you also mentioned Red Bull Ring, which in the old days, some of us, you know, old guards remember it as Österreich Ring. Fantastic location. What is your impression of this beautiful place?
The Red Bull Ring is just an amazing track. I mean, it's in the hills. Red Bull took over, and they made it just an absolutely beautiful track. I mean, the facilities are awesome. The grandstands are amazing. It's just really, it's a very good European circuit. And, I mean, I'd love to see F1 go there and other big series go there also.
Yeah. Now, what were your highs and lows of the season? And when I talk about highs, races that you did well, but, you know, not necessarily that you won. And you're smiling, so I'm sure there is a story there.
I definitely have to be, you know, Nürburgring. That would have to be one of my highs. I mean, I had, you know, okay race, but, I mean, I just felt like I did really well, and I drove very fast. And also the Red Bull Ring. I mean, I was up front. I was leading for a while. And to me, that was the highs. And the lows this season would have to be at Brands Hatch. I mean, qualified, I think, 20th or 18th. And also the street race. And
Nürburgring?
Yes, Nürburgring. That was one of my lows also. I mean, I just didn't have a good qualifying. I hit the wall lightly with my mirror, and it just threw me off. And I just couldn't get the perfect lap in. And then I missed the start. I couldn't see the light. So, I mean, that was probably my lows of the season. It just, that's what hurt me get to try to chase the championship.
Now, street racing, I understand you're pretty good in the rain, but do you like street racing also?
Street racing is different. It's a different form of racing. It's fun and exhilarating, but I mean, it's not my taste right there. I'd rather do like a circuit like Hockenheim or Nürburgring, but I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do. And, every time you're in the car, it's fun.
Okay. Now, you mentioned about guest driver Sebastian Vettel's dad. Also, I understand people like Damon Hill, Carlos Sainz, Mika Salo have raced this year. Do you get a chance to mingle with these people and talk to them about their career?
Yeah, we get to always, you know, mingle and talk to them, and they always give us a speech about our careers and what to do. And, I mean, just to hear every one of them's advice and their stories, it helps us all, you know, like guide us into what it takes to be professional. And also, it's the little things they tell you about that they learned over the years the hard way that they try to help us so we don't learn the hard way, and that way we can be professionals sooner and be prepared when we go into actually a full-time professional ride.
Who do you think has given you the best advice that you thought, wow, this is a great idea?
The best advice would probably have to be from Uwe Alten to stop with the formula racing and go to the sedan racing. That's probably the best advice he's given me.
Yeah, that's good. Now, you also had the opportunity to compete in the, you mentioned, I think it was the same thing, Porsche Junior program.
Yes, I was a part of the Porsche Junior shootout last year.
This is a 450 horsepower Porsche GT3 car.
Yes.
What was that comparison between this car and the Scirocco?
It's a very big difference. I mean, the horsepower is almost double. It's a sequential gearbox in the Porsche, whereas with the Volkswagen, we have a paddle-shifting DSG. And also, I mean, it's rear-wheel drive, rear motor, whereas the Scirocco is the front engine, front-wheel drive. So, I mean, it's two different complete worlds, complete driving habits. And for me to go in, we did 2 days of physical fitness in Berlin, where I was then in Lunga, Italy, with five other drivers. And we had 2 days of testing. That was the first time I've ever driven the car. And it was very, very tough, but I got up to speed quickly. Wasn't quick enough to make the Porsche Junior Cup, but I learned a lot, and I was very thankful to be a part of that year.
Okay. Now, you've done some racing here. How do you find the racing culture on the track among the competitors? Do you think it's a little bit more cutthroat there?
Yeah, I believe it's a little bit more tougher in Europe. They take a little more serious. The competition's a little bit tougher, whereas you might have 5 shining stars here in America. Over there, you might have 10 guys who are shining stars, and they could all be winners. It's just a little bit tougher, and they take it a little more seriously. I mean, over there, they're definitely – all the kids have the mentality from when they're young to when they start racing to win, 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 push, 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 whereas over here, it's a little bit more easier pushed on the drivers.
Okay. Now, in 2009 and 10, you raced in Skip Barber Series. What is more fun driving, tin tops or at the Nürburgring or a single-seater at Sebring bouncing all over the lap?
I mean, they're just two different worlds. I enjoyed both. I missed the, you know, Skip Barber National days. They were awesome, and I enjoyed them. And, I mean, I had a couple great wins in the Skip Barber National Series. But it's just – it's hard to compare them because they're just two different worlds. But I just love doing both of them. And this season, I mean, the Nordschleife would have to be really cool. I mean, a little bit better because, I mean, we were doing about 180 on the back straightaway. So for me, that was up there. That was definitely one of the best rides of my life.
Yeah. Now, DTM and your series also run with F3 Euro Series, if I have this correct. Now, yes. There is this young American from California, Michael Lewis. Do you know him? Do you guys hang out?
Actually, I've never met him, and I've seen him around, and I've mentioned that, hey, I should talk to him because we know we're both Americans. But I have yet to speak to him. I mean, every time I'm busy, you know, like I'm going from a meeting to another meeting, sure. I always see him. But it's always tough to run into, you know, other drivers. But it's amazing to see, you know, like people used to race here in America. They're over in Europe now. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, hopefully next year, then I'll run into him and say hi.
Okay. And talking of next year, what is your game plan for 2013?
My game plan would definitely have to be going back to Europe. What we're going to do is still sort of in the air. But looks like I'm going to do the Scirocco Cup one more year and try to go for the championship and be the first American to win a Volkswagen Series in Europe.
Yeah, no, that's a good plan. And, you know, Volkswagen, Porsche, Audi, they're all one big happy family. Is there any possibility you might do some other junior tin top series with either Porsche or Audi, or are you working on it?
You know, it's always a question, you know, who wants to have you and where's the seats? But, I mean – wherever the opportunities happen to be, I'll take them. But right now, my goal right now is just to focus on the Scirocco Series to win that. And then we'll see from there and see what Volkswagen wants to do.
Okay. Are you trying to put some deals together to at least do a couple of high-profile American races like Daytona 24 Hours and Sebring 12 Hours?
Definitely working on that Sebring 12 Hours. The Sebring 12 Hours, it has very touching to me. I love that track. It's about an hour away from here. It's actually where I had my very first race. So for me, the Sebring 12 Hours is definitely my goal to do this year, and also the Nürburgring 24 Hours. Those are my two goals for the season, to do the two off races. But Daytona 24 Hours, I would love to do it. It's one of the coolest races, I believe, in the world. But the money part's always the part that holds you back. And if anyone wants me to do it, professional driver, I'd love to do it. But as it stands right now, the funding's very tight.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, now there's another young man in tin tops from Florida, nice guy, a good driver, and I'm friends with him, Mr. Jonathan Summerton. Do you know him?
Yes, actually, I know Jonathan Summerton, yes. He co-drove in the BMW at Sebring when my Uwe Altson was driving there, and I met him.
Yeah, he used to race in F3 Euro Series in days gone by also.
Yeah. Okay. He's a good driver, very good driver.
Yeah, and he's a good kid too. I like him. Okay, on your website, it says your favorite meal is currywurst. Now, is this a fusion of Mumbai kitchen meeting Mannheim kitchen?
Well, it's like a hot dog with the curry sauce. It's gotta be one of my most favorite meals. I mean, every time I go to Germany, I at least have it once or twice. And anytime I can have it, I usually have it. But I mean, it's just one of the things that I love having. It's like an American version of a hot dog, but with the curry sauce on it. And I mean, that's just, to me, that's it. I love it.
That's good. Okay. Now, Formula One is heading for a great finale. Bastian or Nando, what say you?
Being that I was a Michael Schumacher fan growing up and that I am a Sebastian Vettel fan, I would have to definitely say I'd love to see Sebastian Vettel win. But being it's Formula One, anything can happen. Anything can happen turn one at the end of the race. So, it's tough to say, but I hope that Sebastian Vettel pulls it off for the end of the season and wins the championship.
Yeah, it will be quite an achievement whether he wins or Nando. And Nando has done a great job too.
Yes.
Okay, now, young guy, you went from here to Europe. A lot of American young drivers want to go there. And like I said, all of them pursue single-seaters. What is the advice or guidance you can give to some young American who is in karting or junior-level racing here and who has aspirations to race in Europe now?
To go to Europe is very tough. I hope that the drivers, they look at financially and that they think smart about with their money and not that they take chances at home, whereas they could lose a home, lose a car. You know, you have to think smart and think about the future. And if you love motorsports so much and you don't have the funding to do the formula racing anymore, look at the sedan racing. It's not, I mean, it is a little different racing, but it's still racing. And if you love racing, you're going to do anything you can to always be in a seat.
Yeah, you know, people like Tom Christensen and Alan McNish, they've made a great career, great and successful career. Okay, now, finally, Dennis Trebbing, the young man, not the race car driver. We already know what you like in terms of food. Tell us what you like in music and what other sports you enjoy apart from motor sport.
Actually, I enjoy country music. I drive a big truck. I love country music. And, you know, I love soccer. So I grew up playing soccer, and I played for about 10 years. And it's just one of the sports that I grew up with, I guess, from my parents, you know, the Europeans. And to me, I just always played soccer. I never got into the football. I'll watch a couple of games here and there, but I'm more soccer.
Okay. I'm going to give you a couple of old country songs from maybe before your era. You may already know them, but if you have not, I strongly recommend you check them out. One is Delta Dawn. And
Delta Dawn, okay.
And the other is The Night Lights Went Out in Georgia.
Okay, yeah.
Are you familiar with these tunes?
Yes, actually, The Night Went Out in Georgia. Didn't Rivas sing that one?
A lot of people have done that, and the version that I really like of this song is from the Ray Conniff Orchestra. That's just a personal choice.
All right,
but good.
I like the old ways, like the Sammy Kershaw and Tracy Lawrence. I like those guys, the old vintage ones, and also Hank Williams. Those are good guys.
So I'm kind of surprised seeing all this. You have not made a run to NASCAR.
Funding. I'd love to. Actually, if I had the opportunity to go to NASCAR and do some stuff, I'd love to, but it comes down to funding. And I mean, I've had the opportunities, but I've had to always turn them down because the sponsors weren't available or weren't there.
Okay. Now, how did you pick up? Is your interest in motorsports from your family or something you discovered on your own?
Well, what happens is my dad likes cars. And I mean, being European, we like the European cars like Porsches and Mercedes and Audis and BMWs. And growing up, we went to the Sebring 12 Hours a couple times. And then for my dad's 40th birthday, he got a racing school from my mom at the Panos Racing School.
Mm-hmm.
And he went there, and one of the instructors happened to keep his business card. And 2 years later in Port Charlotte, one of the instructors actually opened up a car. And he had a go-kart racetrack, and we went up there for my 14th birthday. And he's like, "You want to look at it?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." So for my 14th birthday, I got a three-day racing school and a tag go-kart. And 125cc two-stroke, water-cooled, and jumped in it. And from the get-go, I was very quick. I was just as fast as the instructor. And I raced at IMA karting for a while, did that for about a year. And then I did a three-day racing school at Homestead in a Skip Barber Racing School. And, I mean, from then on, I just was hooked and kept going.
Let me ask you a question about this racing school. You know, over the years, I've spoken to, you know, quite a few drivers, young, old, successful, this and that.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of them went to racing school, and a couple of them, you know, their idea was what a waste of time it was and my money. But, you know, everybody has their own take on things. Yeah. Going to a racing school, whether it was Skip Barber or anything, was that a great help for you in your career in terms of learning the art of motor racing?
Yes, I believe. I mean, racing school, I think, is one of the most important things you should do, because you're going on to a track where you have absolutely no pressure of where your times are being ticked. You have no pressure of having to perform. You have all the time in the world to learn the track, learn the car, and try to perfect your racing line, your racing technique. So to me, a racing school, I believe, is very important for all go-karters and kids coming out, is to do a racing school. That way you become familiar with the formula car. That way you're not jumping into something and you can actually hurt yourself because the speeds are so quick. And for me, it was, I think, one of the big things that helped me perform, you know, to get faster, is to learn, you know, all the little things about racing. I mean, racing is a big picture, and there's always little things that you have to perfect, and I believe the racing school always helps to perfect the little things.
Very good, man. I've been, you know, following this Scirocco Cup. First of all, the car is a very cool-looking car.
Yeah.
And then some years ago, there was this Indian kid, Aditya Patel, who was racing there.
Yes.
And a few days ago, I was looking at that website, and I saw Dennis Trebbing, USA, number second. I said, whoa.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can get a hold of this kid. So it's great chatting with you. I wish you all the best.
Finally, thank you.
Sure. Anytime. And before you go, how about a message to listeners of F1 Weekly? And what I want you to do is do a message in English. And we have quite a few listeners in Switzerland and Germany also. And a message in German language also, please.
All right. Thank you for having me today on the F1 Weekly. Und danke, dass ich war heute auf den F1 Weekly und ich hoffe, alle haben guten Zeit gehabt.
And what is your website, young man?
You can go on DennisTrebbing.com or you can go on to Facebook and go to Dennis Trebbing Racing and you guys can register there and get my emails to get all my press releases and I'll get with what I'm doing. Awesome, thank you.
Okay, make sure you let all your girlfriends know that you've been interviewed by F1 Weekly.
I will. I'll put it on Facebook and everybody.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Dennis, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. So there you have it. Anyway, let's wrap it up with 50 words from the forum. And I'm going to start off with Kehe Sin. Raikkonen does what he's been threatening for some time and is almost excited. Hamilton out again and is not excited. Vettel gets in within a few seconds of P1 after a pit lane start and is excited. Meantime, Weber hasn't the best days and it wasn't even his fault in the end. Interesting to see the immediate post-race body language with Vettel and Raikkonen sitting down having a relaxed chat and Alonso sulking.
Neon Zappa writes, the most exciting race of 2012, except to Kimi, of course.
Yay says, Kimi drops an S-bomb, Seb drops the F-bomb, and that's just the interviews. What a great race with some excellent drives and some driving muppetry. I think the FIA should mandate that the championship leader always start from the pit lane. But they need to correct the regulation that allowed Red Bull to totally rebuild Vettel's car and turn it into a race-optimized super rocket, which mollified the penalty.
2M, not a bad day. Not at all. Kimi almost smiled on the podium.
Interruptor, Kimi's streak of bad luck holds. First race, he wins. After his return, there is no champagne on the podium. Maybe they tried to tell him about it on the radio.
Lap traffic, a fantastic race, the best this season. Awesome to see Kimi on the top step finally. An unbelievable drive by Seb.
Leadfoot says, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing.
Lap traffic.
Again.
Somebody needs to put together a book of Kimi quotes. I remember when he was coming back to F1, someone asked him if he could adjust to the faster pit stops with no refueling, and he said, you stop and then you go. I think I can handle it.
Philip Pegler. Tide set to turn in Austin. In the wake of Sebastian Vettel's oral spillage on the Abu Dhabi podium, it is rumored that the Tide and Moët Chandon have united to create the special blend Moët Chambin de Bouche, which will be used for the post-race podium celebrations. F1's traditional champagne, blended with a shot of mommy's washing machine fuel, is designed to remind drivers that they stand before a worldwide audience of both children and adults, and that inappropriate language will not be tolerated by the FIA. Desiree writes, Kimi went all the way to the top step and the corners of his mouth curled up slightly. Just leave him alone, though stupid Vettel made the long haul from the pit to third, but still is an immature tosser. Hamilton's made his rueful goodbyes to McLaren.
BMW 85. Team Lotus is back again. This race had me standing with my face nearly planted against the screen as I finally witnessed the finish I had been waiting for all season.
And Devo says, Lewis let down by gremlins in the McLaren. Kimi is left alone to win. Fernando pushes hard, but the prancing horse was no match for the dark horse. And the F1 Rube Goldberg machine puts Vettel on the podium. So there you have it. The forum, very active and very excited by this race. You notice that as the excitement of the race always yields more forum activity.
That is correct.
So there you have it. I'm going to Texas, and you're going to Vegas.
Si, senor.
Wow.
I remember one of the races when Michele Alboreto won. It was in the parking lot of Caesar's Palace, if you recall. There was a guy dressed up as Caesar on the podium, and there was Diana Ross giving a kiss to Michele Alboreto. And I said, you know, there you go.
That was exciting.
Oh, yeah. Formula One meets Hollywood and Vegas, baby.
Fantastic. So enjoy yourself, but we'll probably do one more podcast before the big show in Texas.
You betcha.
Any predictions for Texas and NASCAR?
Well, it's a fantastic track, and I do expect Sebastian Vettel to win. And I would like to see Nando also finish the race. And let's see what happens.
I believe the Pope.
It's a fantastic track if you've seen the layout.
Yes, I have, but I think the Pope is in the DNF chapel this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And so who's having a Kablamo?
I can't divulge that kind of information.
Trade secret.
To the higher
authority.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Nass. Well, anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.